on the record. It's now 5:30 on the Tuesday, July 17, 2018 Planning Commission. I would like to start with introductions, starting on the far left.
Good afternoon. I'm Rick Shattuck from Central Kitsap.
I'm Kimberly Allen from South Kitsap.
Jim Swenson, South Kitsap.
Tom Nevins, North Kitsap. Joe Phillips, Central.
Care Ann Gonzalez Harless, South Kitsap.
And Gina Busker from Central Kitsap. Just a few notes for the commission as we start the meeting tonight. I'd like to let everybody know that Spencer Stegman, who we did have as part of our North Kitsap membership, he resigned from the Planning Commission on July 10th. He was accepted into a master's program for real estate development at Portland State. So while he has enjoyed his time here, he did provide a resignation. So I think it's Ms. Commissioner Gelder will be looking for a replacement for him to help us get back up to full steam ahead and have a full membership. It feels like we just got full membership and then we end up losing somebody. So to start out, everybody should have the agenda for today's meeting in front of you. I'd like to ask if there's anybody who'd like to move to adopt the agenda.
I'll so move.
Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Is there any discussion? With no discussion, everybody in favor of adopting tonight's agenda, please raise your hands. That's unanimous. All right. And then we also have before us the meeting minutes from our last meeting, and that was the meeting on July 3rd, 2018. Those meeting minutes were emailed to us to review yesterday, and they also were provided via hard copy or digital copy. As well today. So do I have a motion to approve the meeting minutes from July 3rd, 2018?
Motion to approve.
All right, do I have a second?
Second.
All right, it's been moved and seconded. Any discussions about the adoption of the minutes? And all in favor of adopting the minutes, please raise your hands. And we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 in favor. Any objections? Abstentions? Two abstentions for folks who were not present at the last hearing. And now on to our business. We have a work study today, the 2018 Annual Comprehensive Plan Amendments. We started the work study at our last meeting, and we're going to be completing that work study tonight before we move into the public hearing portion of our meeting tonight. And with that, I'm going to, I think it's Liz, are we going to hear from you first,
yes.
Liz? All right, so if Liz Williams, you can go ahead and get started. Right,
thank you. For the record, Liz Williams, planner with the Department of Community Development. As was mentioned, tonight we're here to continue on the work study session for the annual comprehensive amendment process for 2018. All right, so our agenda for tonight, just for the folks that are here in the audience participating, thank you for coming in and providing your feedback as the commission considers their recommendation to the department. Tonight we'll start out with just a quick overview of comprehensive planning. So those that missed the work study session last week will get an overview, and those that were here will get another overview. We'll also go through the 2018 annual amendment process and kind of what led us to this point this evening. And then we'll conclude the work study session by reviewing the three remaining of the 11 amendments that are before the Planning Commission for consideration. And then the department will turn it back over to the Planning Commission, and you'll hold your public hearing and hear public testimony. Looking forward, on July 31st, please make sure that you've marked your calendar. This is a special meeting of the Planning Commission, so just want to make sure that everyone has that on their calendars. This will be a continuation of the public hearing this evening, and the department anticipates that consideration by the Planning Commission will continue or begin on July 31st. There's a more detailed timeline later on in the presentation that'll go through kind of the plan for the Planning Commission's consideration. So if there's no questions on the agenda, I'll go ahead and get started. So comprehensive planning in the state of Washington is guided by a common framework known as the Growth Management Act. So all cities and counties within, most cities and counties within Washington State are planning under that common framework. Bringing it a little more closer to home at a regional level, Kitsap County does a lot of regional coordination related to comprehensive planning. So there is a multi-county planning policies that are established between Kitsap County, Pierce County, King County, and Snohomish County. Those multi-county planning policies are documented within the Vision 2040 report. And that spells out kind of a common framework for our four-county region. In addition to the four-county multi-county planning policies, Kitsap County also works within our boundaries of the county with the local jurisdictions of the city of Port Orchard, the city of Bremerton, and the city of Poulsbo to develop countywide planning policies, and this is a common framework by which all of the jurisdictions within Kitsap County utilize when developing comprehensive plans. So at the local level, within unincorporated Kitsap County, our Kitsap County Comprehensive Plan must be consistent with the framework for the Growth Management Act, the multi-county planning policies, and also the Kitsap countywide planning policies. And the next slide will go into a little more detail about Kitsap County's comprehensive plan. Our comprehensive plan is implemented through development regulations and programs, which must also be consistent with the county's comprehensive plan. It's a little bit of a delay here on this mouse, and I'm afraid to click it too many times. There we go. Oops. There we go. The graphic's not showing up here on the right, but we'll do. So for Kitsap County, as I mentioned, our local Kitsap County plan plans for a 20-year horizon and spells out a vision for how our communities will grow over time. The plan looks at everything related to community development, including land use, economic development, the environment, housing and human services, transportation, and it also establishes an understanding of the capital facilities and utilities that are required to service the populations as we accommodate growth. In addition to the comprehensive countywide look, we also do and produce work with local communities to develop what are known as sub-area or neighborhood plans, and those are also incorporated within the Kitsap County plan and are more specific to local jurisdictions. In addition to the goals and policies, the comprehensive plan also establishes strategies and investments that are needed by the county in order to achieve the vision over that time horizon. So the State Growth Management Act does mandate that Kitsap County do a major update once every 8 years. This is a full review of all of the goals and policies in the comprehensive plan, and the county is mandated to make revisions as necessary to accommodate population growth estimates looking out into that 20-year time horizon. The last major update for Kitsap County was completed in 2016 and extends to the year 2036. In addition to the 8-year review, the county is also allowed under the Growth Management Act to do an annual review of our comprehensive plan. And this is really something that the board has full discretion over whether or not they'll consider on an annual basis. And these are really supposed to be minor tweaks to the existing comprehensive plan, and any amendment that is proposed must be consistent with the existing comprehensive plan. So these aren't supposed to be items that are completely changing the existing policies and goals in the comprehensive plan on an annual basis. And this annual review is what we're here tonight to discuss. So again, as a point, the board has full discretion over the annual review, and they have complete decision-making authority associated with this amendment process. So the graphic up on the screen kind of gives you a layout of the entire little over a year-long process that we take to look at those small tweaks to the comprehensive plan. In the next few slides, we'll walk you through these phases of the process in a little more detail. You'll see the orange arrow at the bottom under July. That's where we are today. So there's been a lot of work that has gone into this process up until now, which I'll describe in a little more detail. So the scoping phase is really intended to set the scope of what amendments will be considered on an annual basis. So this began back in 2017. The department accepted suggestions from both staff and interested parties, both within the county and out of the county, for potential amendments to the comprehensive plan. In December, the department worked with the board to review the catalog of suggestions that was collected, and the board defined which amendments could be further developed and considered for review. And then in April, the department went back once it had worked with some different groups in the community to refine those ideas, and the board actually established the final docket of which amendments would be considered. So in determining which amendments would be considered, there are what are called site-specific applications, and these can be submitted by property owners or interested parties. And in 2018, the board decided that they would consider applications for site-specific amendments to in rural areas that would add a mineral resource overlay designation. We did receive two applications related to establishing that mineral resource overlay designation, which we talked about at the last work study session. They also would be open to requests that would add a forest resource land designation. We did not receive any applications for that type of amendment this year. In addition to the rural areas, the board decided that they would review applications within urban growth areas that would redesignate land that is needed for infill and redevelopment. And new to the 2018 amendment process is the acquisition of what are known as transferable development rights. And we'll get into a little more detail in terms of how that impacts one of the site-specific amendments that we're going to be talking about tonight. So moving on to the development phase, starting in April, moving to December into April of this year, the county worked with the applicants for the site-specific amendments. We conducted consultation meetings before the applications were submitted to the county for consideration. In addition, we worked with various different community groups, including existing citizen advisory committees and new work groups that were established to help support the development of these proposed amendments. So I did want to recognize both the non-motorized committee in addition to the Kingston Urban Village Center work group that worked very hard with staff and the department and, you know, the Department of Public Works as well and the Parks Department on these proposed amendments. So it's not just internal, you know, staff that is working on these. There are citizens as well that are investing considerable time into these proposals. And then moving more recently, finishing just actually a few days ago, was the analysis phase. And this is really where staff took a look at the proposed amendments and reviewed them based on the State Environmental Policy Act, the SEPA process, if anyone is familiar with that. And we also developed staff reports, which are included in the binders that were provided and are also available online for the public's review. And then really what today is about and kind of moving forward is the public consideration phase of the proposed amendments. So throughout this process, the department has included online an online open house, which basically provides all of the information that anyone could possibly want to find out about this process. If someone hasn't been involved up until this point, they can go back and look at all of the past announcements or documents associated with this process. We're also currently in a public comment period phase of consideration. So between June 28th and August 7th, any interested parties are able to submit public comment regarding the proposed amendments. Just last week, the department held three open houses. So on Tuesday, we were in Kingston. On Wednesday, we were in Port Orchard. And on Thursday, we were in Silverdale. And those public open houses were attended anywhere from 30 to 40 individuals to as few as, 10 folks at one. So it was a good opportunity to really start the conversation and to get some initial feedback on the proposed amendments. So then we're also holding public hearings with the Planning Commission. So tonight is the first public hearing. It is also anticipated that the public hearing will be continued on July 31st, which I mentioned. And in terms of public notification, we have tried to reach out to as many individuals in the community as possible via various means, including our email and electronic notification system. We've also utilized social media platforms such as Nextdoor, and we've also sent out postcards to property owners that are adjacent to any geographically specific amendments. We've also been doing coordination with the tribes and have posted legal notice in the Kitsap Sun. And like I mentioned, information is available on the county's website. So as I mentioned earlier, this is kind of the detailed timeline moving forward for the Planning Commission's consideration. So we held the first work study session on July 3rd. We're continuing that this evening. And then we'll open it up for the public hearing. And then it is anticipated that the Planning Commission's recommendation to the department would occur somewhere in the first part of September to the mid part of September, depending on the level of deliberations that occur related to the proposed amendments. So what are we talking about? I've been saying we're talking about all of these amendments. Let me list them out for those that are in the room. So in 2018, there are a total of 11 proposed amendments to the comprehensive plan. At the last meeting, we talked about the minor updates to the non-motorized facilities plan. This is really an administrative corrections and minor updates to that that existing non-motorized facilities plan, which was managed mostly by the Department of Public Works in addition to the Kingston or the non-motorized committee, citizen committee. We also talked about the Kingston Urban Village Center amendment, which is located in, and impacts the downtown core of the Kingston Urban Growth Area. And that is intended to remove barriers to achieve the vision for planned growth and development within that district. Tonight we will discuss the George's Corner Lammerd, which is a minor boundary adjustment. For those that don't know what Lammerd stands for, it is limited area of more intensive rural development, which I'm not sure if that tells you much more. And then, as well as tonight, we will also be discussing the public facilities designation and parks classifications. This amendment relates to the recent acquisition of parklands in the northern region of Kitsap County associated with the Port Gamble Heritage Park. And then last week, we also discussed the six-year update to the Parks, Recreation, and Open Space Plan. We discussed proposed amendments to existing policies related to affordable housing, and then some housekeeping or clarifying edits to both the comprehensive plan and Kitsap County Code. And then the site-specific amendments. On July 3rd, we talked about the Richardson site-specific amendment, which was a designation from urban restricted to commercial. That was as a result of that boundary line adjustment and making sure that we were cleaning up some of the dual zones in the area. The next two related to the mineral resource overlay designation, so the Yulin Tree Farm Amendment and the Culbertson Amendment, those were both establishing that temporary mineral resource overlay to allow for mineral resource extraction on those sites. Those are both non-project applications, so not proposing any development at this time, but to designate them as mineral resource overlay lands. And then this evening, we will be discussing the final site-specific amendment, which relates to the Hanley property, which is a redesignation from urban high residential to commercial. So in your binders, I know not all of you are looking at the binders, but I wanted to orient those that weren't here last week to the new staff report templates that the department has put together to provide a little more consistency for you as you review these amendments. So each tab in your binder is essentially laid out as you see on the screen here. It starts with the staff report. And on the front page of the staff report, you'll see a summary table, which basically describes the proposed amendment. Then it goes into a little bit of background, which describes the review authority, what the proposed amendment is in a plain talk description version, and then a geographic description of the proposed amendment. Moving on, section two includes the department's recommendation and the justification for that recommendation. Section three includes other alternatives considered for the proposed amendment, if any. And then section four is the most substantial section, that is the analysis portion of the staff report. And it essentially answers to the relevant decision criteria found in the Kitsap County Code. You'll find, as if you've done your homework, that the criteria varies depending on the type of amendment that it is. So don't be surprised if you're reading and it's a little different than the ones that you just read before. And then finally, section five talks about the public involvement and outreach associated with the amendment process, and six is your staff contact. If you have any additional questions, I do encourage you to reach out to staff, and they'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have related to the amendment. And then in terms of attachments, typically attachment A includes ordinance-like amendment language and or a map of the proposed amendment. Attachment B will include all of the pertinent State Environmental Policy Act documents. And then attachment C is any supplemental materials associated with the proposed amendment. So as I do an overview, I'll kind of walk you through the three remaining amendments so you can get acquainted with what is in that binder tab. So with that, I'm going to transition from overview into reviewing the final three amendments. So just one second. All right. So in binder tab four, if you've got it, if you want to flip to that section, this is the George's Cornered Limited Area of More Intensive Rural Development Boundary Amendment. So this is, as I mentioned, a minor adjustment of the boundary for the George's Corner Limited Area of More Intensive Rural Development. This proposed amendment was developed by the Department of Community Development. And I think it'd probably be easiest if I flip to the next slide just to show the proposed area here on the screen. So the circumstances related to this proposed amendment, approximately 0.87 acre portion of a parcel that is currently within the boundary. You'll see here, if I can get the mouse to show up. So this portion here equals about 0.87 acres. That's currently within the boundary, and it's being proposed to be rezoned from neighborhood commercial to rural residential. And then approximately 0.88 acres, which you can see here, that is currently outside of the George's Corner Lammerd, will be rezoned from rural residential and rural commercial to neighborhood commercial. The Lammerd boundary was originally adopted in 2004. It was appealed to the Central Puget Sound Growth Hearings Board, which upheld the county's outer boundary. So there was an appeal, and that appeal was upheld, or the county's established boundary was upheld. In 2005, the parcel on the southeast corner of the intersection of Millers Bay Road and State Route 104 was subdivided into four parcels, and including the two lots that are subject to this amendment. The resulting parcel lines for these two lots did not align with the Lammerd boundary and zoning boundaries, and it resulted in split zone lots. In addition, a wetland study was completed for the subdivision of land, and it provided more specific information than was available through the county's system at the time that the proposed boundary was established. And so this provided new information that was not available at the time. So the department is recommending approval of this proposed amendment. It is consistent with the Growth Management Act, the countywide planning policies, the comprehensive plan, and decision criteria in the Kitsap County Code. The proposed new boundary will maximize and contain the Lammerd by not increasing the overall size. It will realign the boundary to exclude critical areas and buffers from the Lammerd area, and is setting the boundary where it will be permanent control low density sprawl and maintain compatibility with adjacent rural lands. In addition, the proposed boundary will prevent abnormally irregular boundaries by aligning with the parcel lines where appropriate. And by including Lot D, which is consistent with the Hearings Board interpretation of land appropriate for infill development that will be compatible with the use and scale of development at the intersection. So again, just to kind of make sure I'm being clear here, the area that is currently on the left in purple would be removed from the existing Lammerd boundary. And the area that is currently showing the lighter green and darker green is what would be proposed to be added in. So the existing area in the boundary is about 0.87 acres, and the proposed area to be swapped would be 0.88 acres. So essentially the same boundary extent in terms of area as proposed. So I'd be happy to answer any specific questions regarding this proposed amendment if you'd like at this time.
So when it's a staff proposed amendment, does the applicant, the landowner, pay the fees for the application? Because last time we saw this in 2015, it was brought forward by the landowner.
It's my understanding this is a county sponsored amendment, so there was no application fee associated with the proposal.
So how do you go about determining a county-sponsored amendment. What's the process with the county and the landowner?
In this particular instance, because it's an area neutral change, and this is resolving a split zoning situation, the county decided, the department decided to sponsor this amendment.
Well, I guess I'm just more interested in the process. Do you contact the landowner, or does the landowner contact you, and you guys work that out? I mean, I don't care about this specifically, but in general, what is your process when you're sponsoring an amendment? Because you guys are doing a lot of work here. You're doing the SEPA and basically doing all the work the applicant did back in 2015. And that's quite an expense to the department. So what is the actual procedure?
In this case, the procedure was that the county picked up the cost of doing the analysis for this.
But I mean, don't you have a process where you would allow people to come to you and say, sponsor my amendment, or do you just pick one out?
We do, and that's how the other site-specific amendments were chosen. In this particular case, this one had been lingering for a couple of years, so we added it as a county-sponsored amendment.
So how do you determine which ones you don't sponsor? Do you keep a list of that with criteria about how you don't sponsor them?
We keep an ongoing catalog of suggestions. When the board deliberated in the fall of 2017 regarding what the scope of the docket would be for 2018, then the board looks at all the suggestions that are on that ongoing docket, mm-hmm. and then the board narrows down the list and decides what the overall scope of the docket for the year
yeah,
would be.
Yeah, I understand that.
In this particular case, this one was already catalog.
What I'm getting at is transparency and fairness, because there's people here that have paid a lot of money to get their site-specific forward. And what I'm asking, and I'm not trying to be accusatory, but what are your criteria for placing them on that? And then deciding which ones you'll take. I mean, is it just we'll have a list and take a look and decide, or do you have a ranking for that?
In this case, this was a recommendation from the department to the board in order to resolve a split zone.
But I'm talking about in general. You have six coming before you. I understand why this one's here. I'm not debating it in particular. I'm asking about all the ones that come before you. And how a citizen would know, how do they get a fair shake, and where's the criteria? Or is there criteria?
So this is Jim Bold here, for the record, Department of Community Development. In this particular instance, the department decided to sponsor this request because we were aware of the previous site-specific that had been applied for in 2015, which was a single property owner requesting a change that would have continued the split zoning situation. In this instance, when we were looking at it, because it involved it was sort of an ad hoc process because it involved different landowners, and neither of them had approached us to do any kind of change here, but we did recognize a split zoning situation that in some part had also been a result of the counties allowing the subdivision on that southwest corner. And so because the county's action had resulted in some of the split zoning, that's what brought us to the department's attention to sponsor this forward. Had it been a single property owner who come in, or if these two parcels were owned by a single property owner and was making this request, we might have made a different decision in terms of how it would move forward as a possible amendment.
Well, I'm talking in general.
Right.
If I had five different things I wanted you to sponsor for me, what's the process for me to get those in front of you and get those in front of the board so that I could get the county to pay for my application? I understand this one, but
okay.
I'm just saying, what is the process and criteria?
There is no formal process or criteria, so someone could come and ask the department, and we would probably evaluate it based on the merits that they presented. So if it was a situation such as this, which the county had some responsibility for creating the two split zones on the lots, we would probably make that consideration. If it was just somebody who wanted to do a zoning change or a land use change, based on the specifics of that year's amendment process, we would probably direct them to apply as an individual as opposed to the county sponsoring it. That goes into some of the consultation that goes on with the applicants prior to the application process. But neither of these two property owners came forward and pinged the county to make this change in this particular instance. And we would have needed both property owners to come forward with an application to fix it.
Any other questions related to this one? All right, so if you flip to binder tab 5, you'll find all of the relevant information related to the public facilities designation and parks classification update. This amendment will update the Kitsap County Comprehensive Plan land use map and zoning map to incorporate approximately 2,883 acres that was recently acquired by Kitsap County for the Port Gamble Heritage Park. This proposal has been sponsored by both the Parks Department, and we've also coordinated with the Commissioner's Office, who handled the acquisition of the property. The proposed amendment will designate, redesignate from rural wooded, rural protection, and rural residential to public facilities on the public. Kitsap County Comprehensive Plan land use map, and it will also reclassify lands from rural wooded, rural protection, and rural residential to parks on the zoning map. It's easier to see the area that we're talking about here. So on the left hand side of the screen, you'll see the current zoning classification for the property. And on the right is the proposed zoning classification as parks. So this is a result, as I mentioned, of Kitsap County acquiring the property for the Port Gamble Forest property. They purchased it from Pope Resources, and it is proposed to be added to the Port Gamble Heritage Park. This proposed amendment is consistent with the Growth Management Act, the countywide planning policies, the comprehensive plan, and decision criteria in the Kitsap County Code. And again, we'll update. Essentially, this is a clarifying edit to keep up with the acquisition of public facilities and parklands purchased by Kitsap County in recent years. So I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have on this proposed amendment. Seeing none, I'm going to move on. All right, and then moving all the way back to the back of your binder tab 12. The proposed amendment related to Hanley Property LLC. This proposed amendment was one of the proposals within an urban growth area to redesignate for infill and redevelopment purposes. Currently, the site is a contractor storage yard, and it's not currently allowed within the current zoning, which is urban high residential. The applicant requested a commercial land use designation to allow for expansion of the existing use. The existing use is not currently allowed within the commercial zone. The proposed amendment includes three parcels, which total approximately 1.02 acres. And the proposed amendments will also require four transfer of development rights as required for rezones that request an intensification of the land use. Switch to the map here. So the department is recommending deferral of this proposed amendment to allow for a area-wide consideration. So currently, the larger area is characterized by a fragmentation of zoning pattern, as you can see on the maps above on the left. The proposed amendment would exacerbate that pattern by creating an island of commercial zoning surrounded by residential zoning. This also would add a small amount of commercial zoning in an urban growth area that has an existing surplus of commercial land capacity. And then an area-wide consideration can include other zones for the area, such as industrial, that is not currently included in the proposed amendment and may conform more closely with the current and desired future land uses for the area. So the site that is being I'm describing is here, outlined in black. It currently has an urban high-density residential land use designation, and the applicant is requesting to change that designation to an urban high-intensity commercial, as you can see over here on the right. This proposed amendment did receive a determination of non-significance based on the SEPA determination. So I'd be happy to answer any additional questions regarding this one. And I'm not sure if Mr. Gurney would like to join us as well up at the podium. He worked on this particular application quite closely.
Gina Busker, for the record. When you indicate a deferral for this particular party who's applying here, how long of a deferral? When would you be looking at something like this again?
Yeah, so defer review of the proposed amendment. I believe it would be anticipated to be reconsidered and put back on the catalog for consideration for the 2019 annual amendment process is what is currently established.
And would the deferral be required because you couldn't do that analysis at this time because it's not part of the docket of the wider, broader
Correct.
Analysis?
Yes, the current final docket that was established by the board essentially did not allow for consideration of area-wide amendments.
And is that consideration just through Kitsap County or because I think it borders city property? Is that sort of a joint consideration that takes place?
That was part of the decision-making process earlier on this year when they were considering which amendments they would potentially consider. And typically for an annual review, those are, like I mentioned earlier, supposed to be minor tweaks to the comprehensive plan, where an area-wide amendment is really more suited for, based on policy, the kind of midway points in our comprehensive plan review. And feel free to jump in here, guys, if I'm getting anything.
And I would add specifically to your question about the city, we have consulted with the city on this as well, since it is within the Port Orchard. It's outside of the city limits, but it is the Port Orchard UGA. And so we have consulted with the city, and the city has submitted a comment letter.
It may be in the – can you hear me okay? Move it over. Okay. It may be in the staff report. I just skimmed it. How long has this been a contractor storage yard? Mr. Hanley's there.
The applicant claims that the storage yard has been there for over 30 years.
Okay. And have they tried through other comp plan processes to get this changed from the zoning change to recognize the storage yard?
For the specific site, I did not find any of that.
Just was wondering what the history was, if there had been other requests brought before in the past or.
From my research, I did not find one for this specific location.
So there was, okay. I just would be interested if the landowner had ever just come to a hearing and asked for his own, how we do when we're going through the comp plan. And sometimes people don't make an application, but they think they can request a change. Just was curious if that was ever on the record.
To my knowledge,
we
have no record.
Was this part of the I know it's on the Mile Drive there. Was this part of that pullback on the UGA?
It was not.
This is
in terms of the reduction of size.
You know, they reduced the size then.
So the reduction of the urban growth area in 2016.
Right.
My apologies for the record, Darren Gurney. In 2016, they pulled back the urban growth area, and as Commissioner Phillips identified, there were certain property owners that came forward with existing businesses that we classified as rural industrial or rural commercial. This area remained within the urban growth area.
Okay.
Jim Swenson, for the record, is there presently a zoning code violation that exists on this property?
That's being investigated right now, yes.
If so, is it the county's position that we're just going to let it slide until 2019? I guess that's...
That was Kim Allen for the record. That was one of my questions, too. I mean, if there's an active code enforcement on this, is this the property owner's way of trying to cure that? And if so, will the delay result in detriment to the property owner?
In terms of the applicant's intentions, that was mentioned in their application, was to address the situation. In terms of the deferment and whether or not enforcement occurs, I would have to ask for one of the managers to answer that question. There was a meeting that was held that I was not present at.
I see one coming forward.
I don't know what I manage. Jim Bulger, Department of Community Development. There is currently an active code compliance case that's been opened on this set of properties. As Mr. Gurney mentioned, that the applicant did state that they felt that a rezone to a commercial designation would help remedy that code compliance. We've been meeting with them, and that's part of our recommendation, is that we want to make sure that whatever zoning applies to these parcels also helps satisfy kind of the interests of the property owner in terms of their business, but also take into account compatibility with surrounding properties. And so that's part of the reason why we want to kind of take a broader look at that neighborhood, as it were. There are some other uses in that neighborhood, like the South Kitsap Fire and Rescue has one of their major facilities operating adjacent to the site. We haven't received a lot of neighborhood nuisance complaints on the site. So we just want to be able to take a broader look at that. We will probably suspend further, at least land use actions related to the site, until there is some resolution to whatever is the most appropriate zone and classification for that area. Right now, I think there is agreement that this is a contractor storage yard. We are looking for kind of its establishment as a legal non-conforming use in that zone. So that's still work that's pending. So that, I think, goes to Dave's comment earlier about the investigation that's going on. We do understand they do want to expand the use, and so the department thinks that right now a commercial designation doesn't really allow them to do that because they're still non-conforming with that zone. So,
okay. And then just a general question. Are the applications that are submitted for the private amendments available for viewing to the public? I think they generally, there's some sort of a narrative or a justification for the rationale for the request that might be help inform the decisions that we make.
Sure. They are, of course, public documents, and they're submitted to the county. I don't know if the applications themselves are available on our web page. And Liz,
we can make sure that we get a direct link to the Planning Commission after. We'll follow up to make sure that you can access those information.
That'd be great. Yeah. Thank you, Liz.
And then just briefly to the question of deferment, the department is recommending deferment to the next comprehensive plan amendment process. But certainly the Board of County Commissioners has the discretion each year to decide if there will be. We do have some other proposed projects that prior to the subsequent to the establishment of the final docket, some applicants did request future consideration, which the board agreed to. So we anticipate it will be a 2019. But the board is the board, and they will make the final decisions. Thanks.
And I would add that in this type of a proposal where the application ostensibly would seek to remedy the situation that the current landowner is in, we not only in the staff report not only have to look at what the current land use is and how the change would affect the current land use, but we have to look beyond the current land use at what it could become later. For example, if a landowner were to submit a site-specific amendment and after that amendment was passed by the board, then turn around and sell the property a year later, we have to take into consideration what might conceivably happen with that change in land use on that property. And that's one of the reasons why we're looking, why we're recommending an area-wide review.
Can I ask you to speak?
Once we open, we will open it up to public hearing. So I had a feeling we might hear from you shortly, but we're going to continue the work study, and then we'll open it up for comment. Were there any other questions?
I don't have a question on this, any of these three applications that are coming up to us today, but I did manage to go through the reams of paper and did make a couple of pages of notes. And so I'm seeking guidance from the Planning Commission and staff how we may want to deal with the questions that I have. Some of them are very limited in scope, just what does this mean, you know, and some of them are pretty extensive. In the interest of transparency, how do we want to proceed with the two pages of notes that I have dealt with? I'm not anxious to do this, but I think it's information that we should have before we make any judgments on the applications.
And is this something you feel that should be part of the work study versus part of your deliberations? Is this questions for staff?
Well, it could be part of deliberations. I'm okay with that. But staff had indicated previously that if we had any questions, please forward them so that they could get the answers to us. That's why I'm wanting a little come together here.
And the staff, is it a preference whether you work through those now or whether you, I know usually we try to get some of that stuff to you, but maybe in advance you have time.
So I think the department would prefer that if you have any of those two pages of questions that they're clarifying on specifics related to these projects, that would be appropriate to hear them now. You may find that dealing with the other kind of more what if type questions might be more appropriate following testimony and during the deliberation phase. Yeah. So can you go through and parse them?
Well, I could do that, but it may take a little while. That's the concern that I have here, and whether we want to do that. I can do it.
Well, I would, if they're clarifying so that you have strong understandings of the amendments, I would suggest that that would be appropriate at this point. Otherwise, you may want to hold them for deliberations. It's really your choice to provide you with the context you feel you need to take in the testimony and be able to process it. So,
what is the choice of the board, of the Planning Commission, because some of them are very small. Like the first one I have is, what does new units signify on page 4 and 5 of tab number 2?
And I think you would ask, first of all, for an opinion from the commission. I see Ms. Allen has raised her hand.
Yes, I have. Thank you. If this helps, you know, I think that in the interest of transparency, everybody would like to know what the questions are that each planning commissioner has. If we were to submit those in writing to staff, they would have the opportunity to do the deep dive on them without being in front of the microphones and, you know, maybe bring it back in an issues matrix kind of fashion, identifying whose questions were which. And then when we move into the deliberation phase, we can make sure that everyone's questions have been answered as we go forward.
Similar,
that might be a workable format.
Similar to the comment matrix that we see with all the comments that come through the online process.
Yes.
It's a good idea, yeah. Mr. Nevin.
Yeah. It's just a huge work here. And I'm sure, you know, I'm sure in the process, the eyes glaze over, mine did. And there are just a few things, like certain exhibits don't seem to be present. And some other little things like that. They're not crucial, but it's information we need to have in order to make a decision.
Do you think it's information that you need to have to understand the testimony that you're going to hear from the public tonight?
Just understand each of the amendments that are being proposed. We should have all of the exhibits that are mentioned in the amendment. That's all. It's just that some stuff is missing. That's all.
That almost seems in some ways a little bit like a housekeeping issue.
Somewhat?
It seems a little like a housekeeping issue if it's something like a missing exhibit.
Yeah, it is. And then there's some other very, very interesting pieces for me that concern me as to how did some of these processes come about. Like, how did a split zone get created by a boundary line exchange, a boundary line change? I mean, that's the basis of the request. And another one was the request is based on a developer's agreement, but we don't see that developer's agreement in our piece, but we have just a statement that is based on that. So the whole amendment is based on something that we don't see. That's just a request. Can we see it?
I'm going to go back to you, Mr. Boulder. Are these things that you want raised now?
Well, I think some of them would take the department a while to work through. So I like Commissioner Allen's suggestion that if we could get questions submitted to the department, we can certainly make those available and could even start off at the beginning of the next hearing with some of those housekeeping responses, and then the other materials could be considered as part of your deliberations.
Yeah. That would be my preference, too.
If we can leave today with your questions, we can have responses for you by the next meeting on the 31st.
So we're also agreeing that we're going to submit questions that we have so that the staff can bring these.
And we would anticipate that you may have other questions following the hearing. And if you want to ask those during deliberations, staff will do our best to be prepared to answer those on the spot as well.
Okay. And one of the reasons we don't have a lot of questions on some of the applications that will be presented today is we haven't really seen these things much in advance. And so haven't had a chance.
And there may be some references that, I mean, as you see, there's a lot of shuffling in these binder, a lot of paper, and there could have been an oversight in compiling one of the binders. So,
all right, and thank you to the staff. I'm up here looking at a very organized binder. I know that's online as well, but the work that went into it, I can tell a lot of work went into it to keep it organized and make it ready for us, which. We all appreciate at our end of things. Was there anything else?
Yeah, before I turn it back over, I'd like to just kind of run through the department's recommendation on how to look at the public hearing regarding tonight's public hearing. So folks that are here that are wishing to speak regarding the proposed amendments, there is a sign-up sheet in the back of the room for any members, and I don't believe it's been collected yet. So if you haven't put your name on that sheet and would like to provide public testimony, please go ahead and indicate at this time. We are recommending that speakers can address any or all of the proposed amendments or the process itself. During their given time, so based on the number of folks here, between 3 to 5 minutes is what we're recommending. So again, you can speak to one, you can speak to all, however you would like to provide your testimony is great. There's no need for separate trips to the podium for each item. And then each speaker, we ask that you clarify by identifying your name, your hometown or city, and which item you wish to speak to. And then any members of the public that would like to be considered to receive additional information or follow-up regarding the process, please provide your individual contact information either on the sign-in sheet or provide it directly to the clerk or staff here tonight. And just as a reminder, there will be a second public hearing held on July 31st. If anyone is interested in wishing to attend or speak at that public hearing again on the 31st, please feel welcome to do so. So with that, I'm going to turn it back over to you, and we will be here if there are any clarifying questions that we need to answer.
All right. Thank you very much. You're welcome. To members of the public, as we start the hearing, if you decide along the way that you hear something that makes you want to testify, you can certainly sign up along the way. I think the forms still remain in the back. Or if somebody else has covered exactly what you wanted to say, then you can let us know that somebody else handled it and you don't want to speak. Either way, as a reminder to the commission, we'll be sitting in front of you taking in your testimony essentially as a neutral listening function at this time. Our deliberations do not start until the conclusion of all the testimony. And so while we may have clarifying questions for you, as you testify before us, that would be a normal process that we would go through in these public hearings. But to the commission, we won't be doing any deliberation on the dais tonight over what we're hearing this evening. With that, it is now 6:31, and we'll formally open up the public hearing and take some testimony. I'm just going to call people in the order they signed up on this sheet. So the first person I have is both Sally and Blake Harrison. Please go ahead and come forward, and we'll have you just stand at the podium here. We do need to record everything, so we do need you near a microphone and making sure that you speak up and speak clearly so we can have it recorded.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Sally Harrison, and I'm here with my husband, Blake.
For the record, Blake has a cold, so he probably won't say too much.
This is in regard to the amendment, the site-specific amendment regarding landowner Roland Culbertson and the applicant, Kitsap Reclamation and Materials, for the land use change from rural protection to mineral resource overlay. And I just wanted to let you know that we are the direct neighbors, property-wise, to the proposed area that's being rezoned. We own the properties at 2987 and 2957 Sand Dollar Road West. Thank you. I just wanted to say that we've been neighbors with KRM for many years. We bought our property in 1992 and cleared it and decided to build our retirement plan home on the property, hoping that we would be able to get our money's worth out of it when we retire. We're getting kind of close to that now. So what I wanted to share with you tonight is just what our experiences have been with living with a quarry. Bought the land in 92, had a geological survey done, and cleared, built a house, put in a drain field, and drilled a well. Once into our house, this was about the same time that KRM started to operate again. Some of the blasting initially shook our house like an earthquake, like a single percussion earthquake, and it rattled things, and you could feel the whole place shake. It only occurred during the day, and we figured out by watching the news at night that it was not an earthquake, so we figured out it was blasting at the pit. Recently, we've gotten on their call list to warn us when they're going to blast, which is wonderful. Less than 10 years after moving into our new house, settling did begin. The curtain drain at the base of the foundation on the northeast corner, which is this area, curtain drain broke. It actually shattered, and we wound up with very bad flooding in the basement, which caused us to dig it out and repair. small cracks also began to form in the walls of our house. And and in the deck that is below our house. And we had some repairs done. I'll show you this. Okay.
What you're saying is the house was built 94.
This shows a crack on a beam right here that is going down from our upper floor to the main floor of the house. That showed up. This one you probably won't be able to see, but there is a crack right here that's been repaired in the loft from settling. Those are just a few of the things that we've had problems with. So then the rock wall below our house that you saw in the main picture, that started to slide down the hill. And so we had to have that replaced at great cost with additional drainage added because we were not sure if that was not the problem. Large and small insulated windows failed, but because we were under original ownership warranty, we were able to have those replaced. The northeast corner is a problem. We still have a window that doesn't open or close. When the quarry at the end of Werner Road closed, business at KRM did increase, and we have also noticed extreme increase in cracking of our deck below the house. These are some pictures again in the corner. You can see the crack all the way across. And then this is standing at the corner and rotating around to the left. This is in front of the basement door. So
I'm sorry, wrap it up just a little bit. Okay. Five now, okay?
Thank you. Our biggest worry is our drilled well at 182 feet on the property that's right next to the Culbertson piece. And we're really concerned, what if the additional blasting, ruins our water supply? What kind of things would be in place to help us repair or mitigate that? That's our huge, huge concern, never mind the settling stuff, but that's a big concern too. So we're just worried that with additional blasting closer to our home that we're going to have issues. We had originally hoped to build a one-story house on our lower property, but that's right next to the Culbertson property that's going to be utilized. So, again, our retirement plans are kind of in flux right now with this issue coming up. And we really appreciate all the consideration that you folks can give us. So, thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Were there any questions?
Yes. Is your residence off the Sand Dollar Road?
Yes, it is. It's okay. 2957 is closest to the Culbertson property, and 2987 is where we actually live, which is a little bit farther up the hill.
Okay. So you're north.
Yes,
of
yes.
The post. North. Okay.
Yeah, okay. We're the two parcels north of that.
Gotcha.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And I may add, if anybody wants to come out and walk around and take a look, you can just give us a call and let us know.
Okay. Thank you so much for being here. The next person I have is Jack Stanfill. Hello.
Hi, I'm Jack Stanfill. I'm the president and the registered agent for the Chico Creek Task Force. And I just wanted to share some information with you here that you may not be aware of. This, something has changed within the last 3 years here. In 2013, for some reason, the watershed boundary between Gorse Watershed and the Chico Creek Watershed was located in the wrong location on the drawings for the Gorse Watershed analysis in 2012 and 13. that got straightened out. And through that process, the Department of Ecology added a new area to the Upper Hinds Creek Basin, which is Area 21. So it's important and critical that you understand where the watershed boundary is.
And it's the green line right there. Anything south of that is in the Hinds Basin. It's that lake, excuse me. Hinds Lake and Alexander Lake to the bottom right. Then you see the headwaters of Hinds Creek there. You also see gravel quarry B, and about half of quarry C
is in that new area that was studied by ecology. And here's what they came up with, and this is a revised result. And this is parametrics. It'll tell you right there that permitted uses must preserve the forest cover and not result in conversion. And this is the management zones for the Gorse watershed.
Just a second, we're going to turn that around.
Oh, sorry. I thought I saw Richard over standing on his head there. So the permitted use must preserve the forest cover and not result in conversion. And that's based on the findings here of the Department of Ecology's reassessment for the Gorse watershed there in 2013. And here's what they had to say. Basically, they were telling parametrics what they need to say was what they said, okay? And that area up there now, it's been changed. That's all I can tell you. And it says overall, it's not, you know, it's not for conversion. The sediment export is high. The local habitat results is high. Salmon refuge is moderate high, 6.44, and it's for protection as the headwaters.
So that's a green zone up there. It's a very specific study, 25 pages, dealing with that watershed and what it did to include the upper 500 acres that was intentionally left, was inadvertently left out, excuse me. Okay, and then we caught the mistake. And it got changed. Okay. So the protection for the people down in Gorse was not, there was 500 acres not being calculated into the stormwater runoff in 2012 and 2013 until we got that changed. Does anyone have any questions?
And did a copy, were a copy of your materials?
Everyone has a copy.
Okay. Thank you very much. The next person we have is Mark Sandridge.
I have to say is not nearly as informative as the other two guys, but we live at 2880 Sand Dollar Road. The house right across the street, if I were in their backyard and they dug out more of this quarry, I'd fall into it. When we first moved, bought the property in 2009, and started building our house, I was informed, probably incorrectly, that they weren't supposed to dynamite in the quarry. But since then, we've heard a lot of blasting going on. We chose the area for its quiet and its solitude, and it sounds like bombs going off down there. So it sort of ruins our enjoyment of our property whenever they're doing the blasting. And I don't know how much of an impact if this would have to our property if they were permitted to extend their mineral resource overlay to include those two areas. Because once you, it's like a big heavy truck, once you let the brakes off at the top of the hill and it starts rolling, it's going to keep rolling until it crashes into something at the bottom. And that's what I'm afraid of, that a redesignation would just get that truck moving. Thank you.
One question for you.
How often are they blasting?
Well, I haven't put it on a calendar, but I can't tell you. I just know I hear it when it goes off. Maybe.
If you can answer that question.
Yeah. Sally Harrison, for the record. Being in that area, I can tell you that it's once or twice a week. And that's about it. And it's always during the day. And sometimes you can hear it, and sometimes it's a blast. So it varies.
Thank you.
That sounds about right. Of course, whether she can hear the smaller ones way back where they are versus where I am might be a little different.
With any other questions? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Sandridge.
Thank you.
Oliver Hanley?
Good evening. Oliver Hanley. Owner of Hanley Properties, LLC, and thank you for being commissioners. This is a pretty interesting job, to say the least. I'd like to get a couple of things straight right off the bat. You would love to have me as your neighbor compared to the fire station. It's grown exponentially, maybe five times the size when it started back in the 70s, but I want to get a couple things straight. When I think of an expert sometimes that doesn't know what they're talking about, that'd be a person with a briefcase 50 miles from home. And when somebody says, I have a business that's contractor storage, I'd like to know where that name came from. Back in the 60s, Charlie Ryan had a business on the top of Mile Hill. He built South Park, Parkland there in the South. Kitsap Bank, he was a top-notch contractor in 76. I purchased the land and in his business, he had bulldozers and trucks and office and things. And then he used part of my property, and I ended up with some of the stuff that he had. In the early 90s, Mark Grimm came to me and said, you got to shut down here. You're not zoned correctly. And I go, really? So we got the aerial pictures, and Mark Grimm will gladly testify here as the fire chief and Bruce Wiggins, the deputy chief. Oh, what a wonderful neighbor I am. We run out 49 guys and trucks, and we've been in business for 38 years, and we've been on that site for 38 years. Also, when Charlie Ryan was there, it was such an intense construction site that the Annapolis Water District bought it, and then when they sold, I was very interested in the property because I knew the cell tower was coming in, but it was an inside deal, and the fire station got it, which is great. They love me. I love them. But when they're spraying water over the top of the buildings and getting my guys wet in the mornings or having their fire drills, it's a little annoying. I don't mind the noise. I'm a great neighbor. But Charlie had hazmat there. He had offices, and it was a tragic thing when he went out of business. And then Mark Grimm, of course, I never worried about zoning. I'm zoned. I'm a construction company. And Mark Grimm clarified that. And now DCD, we had a tragic accident in our lower lot and half the lot with buildings and things, and so we decided to enlarge our parking lot, and I'm a pretty honest guy. I got demolition permits, asbestos tests, and I got an engineer to do the stormwater, and they said, no way, because I'm enlarging. I'm not enlarging. We moved our main office downtown, but we still have an office up above, and it seems like property rights have jettisoned out the window compared to what we've been doing for the last 38 years, and probably 20 before that. And I know a lot of you people look pretty young up there. It's been a construction site before you were born. And this construction or contractor storage, I don't know where that came from. Remember I talked about the briefcase 50 miles from home? Also, the people in DCD are great people, smarter than me, and that's why I've made my living as Joe Lunchbox Roofer. But getting back to the zoning, I'm at a loss, and I don't even like this putting it down the road for another year because it's kind of a closed, airtight case. And, you know, my personality is a little aggressive, but these days that's how you succeed at business. Two complaints in the last 40 years. I hit a tree root. That's what started this whole thing. My neighbors, they were worried about their tree. And then before that, which all the contracting buildings that I have, offices and things, were permitted by the county. And with those permits, we had one person said one of my buildings was too big. But I love Kitsap County. I love being in business here. But it's a rough fight sometimes. Thank you for your time.
Can I ask you a question?
Oh, absolutely.
Currently, when we look, it looks like there's two different parcels when we showed it, and that what the existing use is. What is happening on those parcels right now?
There are three parcels that are in contention here, and I owned all three of them. And a lot of the reasons they can't answer your questions, and I apologize for trying to speak up, because they don't have the records. The fire department, and I'll get to your question, the fire department inspected me for 14 years with all the records, paint lockers, fire extinguishers. When the county took over that area of inspection and the fire marshal moved to the county, I never had an inspection since. But the three parcels used to have three rentals on the very front, and in the back was what we cleared. Charlie Ryan cleared it back in the early 70s, and he used that as part of his business. He put equipment on it and different things. And then when he went under, I just continued. I had, you know, one big building already built, and then he had some facilities there. And so at that business, we run our trucks. We have an office upstairs. Materials come in and out. We, you know, have backlogs of materials that we load and things. And really the key thing in this business is you'd love me as a neighbor. Early to bed, early rise, but our business runs from about 6:15 to 7, then it's quiet all day. The guys are gone. They trail in, you know, in the afternoon from 3 to 5 to 3 to 6, and I've never had a complaint up there. And, I mean, really, everybody sings that song, me, me, me. Well, I'm a good guy. Go ahead.
Any questions? Yes, go ahead, Mr. Swenson.
Jim Swenson, for the record. What is it about the term contractor storage yard that you don't like or don't agree with?
Well, I have 30 trucks, and I've had that number for a long time. And as far as contractor storage, the material that comes in goes out very fast. We don't store things there. And it's like we have propane, we've always had a gasoline. I have a gasoline storage on my farm that I don't keep large amounts of gasoline because we have a flammable brick lot. And when the fire station came in, they could really, Brad Wiggins inspected me for years, they could tell you there were a lot more than contractor storage, but we've been that for the last 38 years. And I understand the county, the thing that they would say, well, maybe I want to sell my place. I'd be glad to put some kind of covenant in that I would never sell to a rock crushing company or, you know, some industrial thing. It's just that's what we've always been. It's been a roofing company that runs their trucks out. We get skylight deliveries. We get we have plywood storage. It's been the same. It's toned down a lot from what Charlie Ryan had, and from me making that transition in the 70s, I don't know where all this came from. And you asked me, did I apply for this? Did I apply for that? Look, I'm an old guy. I've just been doing the same thing. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Hammond. Is there anybody else present this evening who either came in late or through the testimony you've heard today would like to make sure you're heard? Yes. Go ahead and come forward. Hello.
Hi. I'm Mark Maurin, for the record. I work for Euland Tree Farm, and I live in the city of Puyallup. I just want to respond to the comments that were brought up earlier. The ecology study that that individual talked about was a planning document. It wasn't a regulatory document. It was a planning document to point out these are things that you should consider when you permit or do things in that area. And it's a good document. It gives you good ideas of what to be careful about. The issue is we studied the stormwater, we studied the stream, and we did that in 2007 with the CUP when our mines were approved. It was challenged, and we won the challenge. It was brought up again in 2015 when we revised our CUP so that we could, instead of hauling out the north end of our property, we're doing it the south end, going out Warner, which is industrial, versus North Lake, which is residential. Again, that issue was brought up. It was challenged, and we won the challenge. So I guess what I want to say is that we did do the studies in that drainage. We did design the mines to make sure that we didn't exacerbate any sediment issues or stormwater issues or water flow issues there. Thank you.
Thank you very much. All right. Anybody else present who would like to testify before we adjourn to continue this hearing later? Hearing no response, it is 6:57, and we're going to adjourn the public hearing portion of our meeting, and we will resume with additional public hearing July 31st, 2018 at 5:30 p.m. You're more than welcome to return on that date and invite anybody you want who may want to come and testify on that date. With that, I'll adjourn the public hearing, and we'll resume with just the remaining issues on our regular agenda.
So, Jim Bolger, Department of Community Development, for the administrative update. I just wanted to point out one thing that Liz mentioned before, that the staff reports we're using for the comp plan amendments are part of kind of an overhaul of the department's staff report, not only for the Planning Commission, the Board of County Commissioners, or the legislative actions that the department deals with. We're doing a similar thing for our hearing examiner documents, and so we're kind of beta testing it right now. We're hoping to have greater consistency within our reports to the various bodies that we work with. So please, we won't do that tonight, but consider it as you're reviewing materials, because afterwards we'd like to have a conversation about, is this new format really providing you the information that you find valuable? Are there tweaks? This isn't cast in stone, but we'd like to make sure that we have kind of a consistent reporting format for all of our various venues in place. But we want to make sure, most importantly, that the end user, you all, are satisfied with the outcome. So take a look at it. Let us know if you have any improvements that you'd like to make, and maybe we can take some time at one of your subsequent meetings to kind of go through and review it and look for some possible tweaks. I just want to mention a couple of other things that you should have received tonight. That was at your last meeting on July 3rd. The director of the department, Louisa Garbo, was here, and I think she shared with you that she was going to be providing the regional centers framework, which is some work that was recently adopted by the Puget Sound Regional Council, the PSRC, as they're oftentimes referred to. They have designated regional centers, two regional centers and one industrial center in Kitsap County, Silverdale being the only one that's in unincorporated Kitsap County. The other two are with the city of Bremerton, and the port of Bremerton out at the airport is the industrial center. So there's information on that recently adopted framework from Puget Sound Regional Council. And then the other thing was we recently completed kind of a strategic action planning exercise within the department, and so you should have a copy of that. Certainly happy to answer any questions, either informally or formally at subsequent meetings if you have anything. So that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anybody else who has any issues to raise for the good of the order? It sounds as if what we've settled on is going ahead and emailing any questions in that we have that we don't think perhaps would be appropriate sort of on the fly as we go through our deliberations. So just as a reminder to our members here, when you do email, I think it'd be a good idea to communicate to Amanda. Please do not email to all of the members of the commission. Just go ahead and email individually, and then she will get that to whomever the expert is in that particular area so that we can get the answers to that. And
on your planning commission email account,
from the planning, please. Yes, from the planning commission email account. But I think the key that we keep getting reminded of is just no reply all or email all. With that, if there are no other items for the good of the order, I'm going to go ahead and adjourn the meeting at 7:01.